morning is Calhoun against Ramsey.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. This case was tried to a jury on one Section 1983 civil rights claim arising from a policy applied by defendants to a person like plaintiff who arrived at the Kane County Jail with special needs for medication. The primary issue on appeal involves the jury instruction that was given on the policy claim. There's a second issue that's briefed about the admissibility of evidence, and unless there are questions from the court, we're prepared to stand on the written arguments on the second issue.
But on your first issue, you haven't argued that the policy in writing actually has something, you know, paragraph X, under no circumstances allow people to pre-qualify, if you will, their medications. What you're arguing is that there is an omission in the written policy, as I understand it.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, that takes me to the next point, because in the omission situation, it's not as easy to say, well, this particular one event where the item that's omitted is enough to show that there is the negative of the point. I think that's why the district court thought that this really belonged in the widespread practice. I mean, there are a million things you could talk about in policies, and the omission category is so open-ended that you've assumed that it means you can't pre-approve. There's actually evidence that suggests that sometimes one nurse did, and the sheriff says, well, you know, people can go out of the way. So I don't know. I mean, it seems to me your omission cases under our law particularly need to be treated differently from the affirmative statement cases.
If that's true, the district judge should have dismissed the complaint. The district judge should have granted summary judgment. The district judge should have granted a motion at the close of plaintiff's case.
Well, that means you got more than maybe you should have gotten.
If that's true, we would have tried to gather that evidence.
It would mean this is all harmless, that this case never should have gone to trial.
Well,
the judge was willing to let you show that there was some pattern.
Everybody knew that we weren't going to show that we were relying on the city of Canton theory that by not having this policy, that was deliberate indifference to an obvious need. And that is all you need is a single incident in that kind of situation. We didn't try to gather other evidence. That everybody knew that. And then at the end, we were doing a jury instruction conference. Defendants come forward and say, well, you got to prove more than one instance. And we never proved that. We never tried to prove that.
Right.
And it's tremendously unfair to change the rules at the end when we weren't trying to prove that. We didn't ask other prisoners,
But what it sounds like is, had you announced that at the outset, summary judgment should have been granted.
We didn't keep this a secret, Judge. It was very obvious throughout the whole litigation that our theory was, by not having this policy of allowing pre-approval, that was the moving force to the terrible thing that happened to Mr. Calhoun. If Your Honor is going to adopt a flat-out rule that in a city of Canton case...
I don't see what would be left of Monell if you could say that the culpable policy or decision for which the municipality is liable is that they didn't have a policy in our favor in case X.
That's city of Canton. If there's an obvious need for a policy and they don't have a policy and that causes the constitutional violation, then that's a Monell claim. Maybe Your Honor's disagreeing with City of Canton, which is certainly Your Honor's right.
You are reading of City of Canton.
Well, perhaps that's also certainly possible. But the theory that we proceeded on was changed on us at the end of the trial. If a fundamental fairness requires that we not be lulled into that the district judge not change the theory on us when the case is going to the jury. We tried the case on our City of Canton theory, on our reading of City of Canton, which perhaps the court disagrees with, but we should have been allowed to marshal our evidence if we were wrong in that theory. And we didn't get that opportunity.
But there apparently is some confused. I mean, your opponents point out that the judge perhaps correctly articulates what you were saying. I'm looking at page 27 of their brief, but it's probably elsewhere. He says, you keep raising your case, this is the judge, is one in which what you need to establish is that they needed a written rule and didn't have one. Well, that's what you're now saying. And he says, and that has not been your theory to date. I mean, the theory to date has been that they have a practice of not allowing pre-verification, which is frankly what some of the sheriff's testimony sounds like. The sheriff keeps saying it's up to the person, which of course you rightly could say, look, you know, Mr. Calhoun was trying, and it never happened. But there is clearly, there are threads of both of this. The judge seems to understand that you're saying that they should have had a written rule. But then he says you're also saying that they do have a practice of not making provision for pre-verification.
But, we don't have any argument with that. Well, what we disagree with is what the instruction, which allowed the defendants to argue, what's at page 529 of the transcript, that the defendant has to prove that something that happens all the time, that just proving that this happened once isn't enough.
So why do they need a policy if hypothetically, Mr. Calhoun is the only person who's ever in the world needed pre-approval of medication?
This is an obvious need to do that.
Is it obvious if there's only one person that's ever come up in Kane County?
Well, because we're just fortunate that somebody else hasn't shot up there and died.
That's right. Your premise is that there is a set of people out there that the jail should be ready for, maybe diabetics, maybe people like Mr. Calhoun with a variety of medical needs, so that the governmental entity in question should affirmatively address a point.
That's a question of fact, whether the need was obvious for this policy. I don't think it's a question of law to say 30 people have to die before the policy is unconstitutional. And the defendant certainly could have argued at trial that it wasn't obvious that we needed this policy because nobody else has this policy and we don't follow this policy. And it's that's a question for the jury. But to require us to prove that this didn't happen, that this happened only once, that no one, that this is the first time it happened, and therefore you don't have a constitutional claim, should not be the appropriate reading of City of Canton. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Fleischman. Mr. Vaughn.
Good morning, judges. Robert Vaughn for the defendant. Your Honor, I recognize this is your sixth case, and it's been a long morning, so I'll try to be swift. We believe that the court should uphold the jury's verdict and affirm the trial court's judgment. As you know, there are the two issues in the case, and I'll follow Mr. Flaxman's lead and not address the issue on the evidence unless the court has any questions. The policy at the jail is a reflection of the Illinois County Jail standards. The process was followed completely correctly with regard to the plaintiff. As you know from reading the record, he brought his medications to the jail and they went through the process of getting those medications verified. One of the medications, in fact, had been verified, a medication for trazodone, and they were waiting for the call back from the doctor to obtain the muscle relaxer diazepam. The trial court itself, as you may recall, specifically said there was no evidence that the process, the policy at the jail would not have resulted in Mr. Calhoun getting his medication as he was supposed to get at the time of his sleep. And I think that's exactly what the evidence showed, and that's exactly what occurred in this case.
This was a self-reporting to the jail, wasn't it? He was just showing up at the jail to begin the sentence.
That's correct, Judge.
Does he decide what time to show up, or is he given a time?
I believe, Judge, and forgive me if I'm wrong on this, but I believe there was a time period that he had to show up, because I know he showed up about 7 p.m. at night. I know the date was set by court order, and while I might be wrong, and perhaps Mr. Flaxman can clarify this, I thought there was a time period, too, that he had to show up.
I thought he got there 30 minutes early, actually, that it was 7:30, and he was trying to get things sorted out.
That may be the case, Judge. I'm sorry. I know that the date was set, of course, and there may have been a time.
Is it a time specific or a time frame?
Well, I know that the judge is correct that he contended that he was showing up early, so I can only guess based on that there was evidence that he was supposed to be there at a specific time. I think that's a fair inference to draw from the evidence. But there is no, as the court knows, throughout the case, the theory of the plaintiff, as I understood it, was both a policy and a practice. The jury instructions have no less than 10 references to policy or practice, and that's the part of the jury instructions that both sides agreed to. Once they were pursuing both theories, policy and practice, it's our position the jury needed to be instructed on that, and that's exactly what occurred in this case. Unless there's any further questions, judges, thank you for your time, and we would ask that you affirm the trial court's decision.
Thank you. Anything further, Mr. Flaxman?
No, that's your first question.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow.